All right, fans, here we go with the main event of the evening. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, independents and boxing fans joining us around the world, the time for talk is over. The time to fight is here. It's the time we've all been waiting for.
Well, if you want shady, this is what I'll give you. A little bit of weed mixed with some hard liquor. Some vodka that'll jumpstart my heart quicker than a shock when I get shocked at the hospital by the doctor when I'm not cooperating, when I'm rocking the table while he's operating.
Hi, and welcome to the Heroic Play podcast. In this series, we'll be trying to help you to improve your game of Guild Ball. We'll be doing that by talking to people and looking at the things that they're considering when making tactical decisions, or the sort of things they're considering in certain situations. It's probably useful if you've already got a fairly good understanding of the rules of the game. And maybe if you're a super advanced player, you might just learn something too. This series doesn't follow any particular order, so you don't need to listen to them from one through to however many numbers we managed to get up to. But pick out the ones that you think might be useful to you. So I think it's kind of important that you perhaps know who's going to be on the podcast. Some of the time we might vary, but I'm presuming that probably I will host most of them as they're kind of my questions. So let me tell you who I am. My name is Max. I've been playing Guild Ball for about a year. I am quite rubbish at the game. Don't get an opportunity to play hugely frequently. I have two small children who kind of put pay to those designs. And therefore, I find it quite difficult to kind of build up the muscle memory from kind of playing repetitive games over and over again, which I think is kind of important and useful. So that's kind of how we end up with this sort of podcast. This is about me trying to steal information and knowledge from people who are better at the game than me. And hopefully you'll find some stuff that's kind of might be interesting to you too. I'm now going to allow the two decent Guild Ball players to introduce themselves who are going to be featured in this episode. So I'll hand over to them now.
Hello, I'm Mark Southard. I've been playing Guild Ball for coming up on 2 years in the summer. And I'm a pundit based in the Midlands, and I am pretty much lost in mid-table mediocrity.
Hi there, my name is Andy. I'm a pundit for the West Midlands. I work a lot with Mark under his banner, the Heroic Play. I've been playing Guild Ball for 2 years now. I'm a reasonable player, again, mid-tier, double mediocrity. I like colour fuchsia and I like bomb disposal.
Sometimes it just seems everybody only wants to disgust me. So this must mean I'm disgusting. But it's just me, I'm just obscene. Hell. Though I'm not the first king of controversy, I am the worst thing from Elvis Presley. To do black music so selfishly and use it to get myself wealthy. Hey! There's a concept that works. 20 million other white rappers emerge, but no matter how many fish sing the sea, it'll be so empty without me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized undisputed heavyweight championship of the world. So now there's only one thing left to say. Ladies and gentlemen,
hello and welcome to the latest Heroic Play podcast. In this episode, we are going to focus predominantly on the plot cards with the idea of understanding which plot cards people take. Are there certain circumstances where you might take one and might not take one? And if you do take them, like, what are you looking for in a game that might mean they were useful to you? To start the episode, we're going to start with the first card in front of me, which is one that's called Heroic Landing. And Andy, this is one for you. So could you talk us through a bit about that card, please?
Yeah, sure. So Heroic Landing requires a friendly model to spend a momentum to use a heroic play. And the reward is you get one back. So essentially it gives you a free, if you like, a free heroic play. Right. Now, I think this is situation depending on the team that you're playing. So, for example, I sometimes feel the fifth team, which doesn't have a heroic play in it, utterly useless. Right? Yeah, so it's utterly useless to be. And to be fair, unless you've got Meat Hook on the pitch for Butchers, also, right, you know, who cares? Right, frankly. However, on the flip side of that, if you've got a team like the Brewers who have heroic plays coming out of their bum hole, right, you know, suddenly that becomes a thing. So I would say it depends on the team that you're playing.
Fat. Mark, any other thoughts?
No, pretty much the same, really. I suppose it's one of those that if it's useful, and I suppose probably if there's nothing, like if you've got something that really doesn't play into your team at all, as well as a different plot card, like for example if you've got like Good Marker, which is benefit on ranged character plays, and your team doesn't really need that, then maybe you would take it on the off chance, you know, provided you've got a heroic. It might be I think it is, you need to have heroics for it to be of any benefit, and then I suppose, are you going to be able to use it, or is it likely to just sit in your hand all game and not get used? Is there something better that you could take? But yeah, it's useful in the teams that bring heroics, basically. It's in a nutshell.
So, situational card, depending on team choice, and then it's even then, it might still only be a medium pick. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much. Right, so card number two. Card number two is one that's called Knee Slider. And Mark, you're going to start us with that one, please.
I'm so glad this came back from season one. It's changed a little bit, but it's brilliant. So basically, a friendly model scores a goal, and then before the subsequent goal kick is resolved, the model that scores may immediately make a dodge up to their max move instead of using run the length. So effectively, you score the goal, you don't have to pay the momentum to run the length. You can just play Knee Slider, and then you can take a dodge up to your max move, which is really good. It plays well into a lot of teams that have got the capability for sort of like first turn goals, so that you can throw a player forward, score a goal, and then retreat to safety. Is my sort of way of using it. So I tend to use it early, because I suppose if you score that early goal, dependent on the team that you're playing and the opponent that you're playing against, you might not get a great opportunity to use it again if the scrum already is happening later in the game, and getting that runaway might not be that useful. So I tend to use it sort of early game when I score a goal. But I think if it comes into your hand, a lot of people will pick it, because it is a really, really good card in my mind.
Cool. Andy, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Mark completely. I think it's a phenomenal card, and I equally am glad that it's come back.
Yeah, I think for me, this is a must take. Every time it lands in my hand, it's one of the first ones just goes into the pile of keep.
Mm. Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. It's like, yeah. I've got an E-slider, I'll have that.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that there's the piece around also being able to also influence where the other person kicks the ball out to as well.
Yeah.
You can, because if you, where you position the person who's done the knee slider over to one side of the pitch or the other, you might then be able to influence where they choose to kick the ball out to.
Yeah, exactly.
To try and either avoid that person or whatever it might be. Good. Fabulous. So that's Knee Slider. So card number three is Field Dressing. And Andy, we're back over to you for Field Dressing, please.
Okay, so Field Dressing. I think this is a good kind of... I think this is a good card. I quite like it, especially if you've got a team like, I don't know. Like, I find that sometimes if I'm playing like Tapper Brewers, or if I'm playing Engineers with Pinvice, that sometimes I can be a little low on momentum. You know, and I think that's... this card gives you that ability. A friendly model uses Come On Mate to remove conditions, right? So, you know, especially against alchemists, you know, fantastic, right? absolutely fantastic against Alchemists, also against Esther's Brewers, right, you know, where you might have, like, you know, all sorts of, like, fiery death going off from Stoker, Harry, Esther's, you know, all that sort of thing. So for that condition game, outstanding. You know, get rid of like fire, poison, whatever you've bleed, whatever you've shoved on that person over there. Fantastic. Get rid of all that, and then get rid of it for myself for free. Outstanding, brilliant. I think that if I'm playing a team that's got a strong condition game, right, that will be a serious consideration, depending on what I've got in my other hand, but it will certainly be in contention.
Ah, thank you. Mark, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones that you will take if you're playing into a condition-heavy team, like you're going it up against a condition-heavy team. I wouldn't say that it's in the same way that Knee Slider is. It's not always an instant pick, but sometimes it's like a, yeah, I'll take that because it might benefit me. It's like a second tier kind of pick, basically, if anything, I would say.
So that one perhaps more about the team that you're playing against than the team that you are choosing to play with, if that makes sense?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Okay, so card number four is Man Marky. Mark, can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so effectively, you need to inflict the taken out condition on an enemy captain, and then during the next influence phase, you add +2 influence to your influence pool. I think it's probably a second tier card for me, because some captains aren't the easiest to take out. Personally, the amount of times I've had Man Marking in my hand, and I've taken a captain out and I've forgotten the card is killer. But if you can take out their captain and you have got it in your hand and you do remember to use it, it's pretty good, because +2 influence is the equivalent of like an extra player's worth of influence back in your hand, basically, which just it is a powerful card. I just forget to use it because I'm crap. And sometimes it's a bit like, do I really want to go and try and kill that captain? Like, if you're playing against Corsair, it's probably not the person that you want to try and kill. Like, you know, do you really, really want to go and get stuck into Tapper? Probably not. You know, there's some captains that you don't really want to be attempting to kill, or aren't that easy to kill, so it's not necessarily going to be that easy a goal to achieve.
Yeah. Okay. Andy, any thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with Mark. You know, it very much depends on the captain. You know, take Fisherman, # Year of the Fish, for example. You know, if I see Shark on the table, I might think, yeah, do you know what? You know, looking at my cards, depending on what I've got, and again, it's, you know, it's a second tier, like, you know, consideration. And you know, I might look at it, I might think, yeah, do you know what? Chances are I might get a pop at Shark. You know what I mean? I might get a pop at Shark. Yeah, fair play. You know, even Fillet, I might get a pop at her, but...
Yeah.
But Corsair, yeah. Corsair, Tapper, you know, I'm only thinking, God, I'm going to have to work so hard to get that card. You know, yeah. It just doesn't become worth it at that point for me.
Yeah. The thing for me might be, I think that it, and this is probably because I'm extra rubbish, is my worry with that card is that it might encourage me to go and do something stupid. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
I might get hung up on it as a kind of a really good idea, even when it's not a good idea.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, definitely. It can alter your playstyle because you're trying to achieve the card in a situation where you shouldn't be trying to achieve the card. There might be somebody who's an easier target, but you get locked on to trying to kill the captain because you've got the card that says kill a captain.
Yeah, I think this comes down to Max, I'm not even thinking you've never played a big league game, right? Except for at SteamCon, where...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the big league kind of has those cards which tells you, like, you know, requirement is this, reward is this, plus CPs and this and the other. And in those games, right, you know, it's great. But in a general game, like a league game, tournament game, anything which you're trying to force, right, rather than playing what's in front of you, I think like, you know, is more often than not, I'm not saying it's always the case, but more often than not, detrimental to your playstyle.
Yeah. Going to distract you from the 12 VPs, right?
Yeah. It's like getting locked onto a player like, I don't know, Casket.
Shut up. Right. Shut up.
Yeah, right. Next card.
Good. Yeah. So, while we're on the subject, we'll move on to our next card, which is Composure. And Andy, you're going to talk us through Composure.
Okay, then. Right, yeah. So, I used to think that Composure was rubbish, and then I started really using it. And, you know, it is I find it's brilliant for setting up snapshots, right? Because I like the football-y game. If you're going for like snapshot teams, so, you know, I use Sarkana a lot, for example, right? But, you know, when you think about the engineers, you've got Colossus, Velocity, you've got a whole range of really good snapshot characters in there, right? But being able to, and, you know, being able to be engaged by somebody and getting a net plus one to your kick, right, you know, that's brilliant, right? So Pin Vice, for example, goes and gets the ball, swags up, is engaged by Corsair, right, you know, is still on plus one kick, right, kicking to Colossus for the snapshot.
Let's just talk through the card, Andy, just really quickly.
Yeah, sure. A friendly model makes a pass while engaged by one or more enemy models, right? So the friendly model gains plus two, plus zero kick for the duration of the action. Right, so if you're going for that quick, like, counter goal, something like that, right, you know, brilliant. So, yeah, for me, setting up snapshots, right, situationally excellent. You know, it makes an average three-dice player a four-dice, five if it's bonus times, right? You know, that's tasty. That's tasty.
Yeah. Good.
And, like, you know, if you've scored and then, you know, you can get that composure passed a snapshot back, you can suddenly be eight VPs up. That's, you know, that's huge.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Mark?
No, not really. It's a card that I probably don't take generally. Like, I have had it in my hand a few times, but probably to some degree my playstyle doesn't really make it of that much benefit to me. So it's one of those ones that I will, unless I've got a really garbage hand, it probably won't make it into my hand, probably.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm the same. So it's interesting that Andy really likes it, because it would definitely be probably near to a last pick for me. So good. Right. Card number six is Brace for Impact.
Yeah.
And Mark, talk us through that.
So one of your models gets charged. You play Brace for Impact, and your model gains Stoic and Tough Hide for the duration of the charge. So Stoic is ignore the first push, and Tough Hide is reduce damage by one. So yeah, it's one of those cards that, again, I will, like Knee Slider, if it's in my hand, I will take it. Because it can be, like, it's probably really, really well used if you've got a player who's taken a little bit of damage and a good charge from somebody like a good charge will either finish them off or will put them in a really bad spot. So playing it as a kind of, I suppose it's like super defensive stance, really. Yeah, so it's one of those ones that I will always pick, and it, there's always a point where it is useful in the game.
You're always going to get charged at some point, aren't you? Probably.
Yeah, like 90% of games you will receive a charge. Like, there's rare occasions, but, like, I would say pretty much every game more than 90% every game you probably get somebody charged somebody.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Andy?
I call it the anti-Harry card. if somebody, basically, it, you know, that, like, Harry, Harry the Hat's a phenomenal character for his pushes and repositions and all those sorts of things, right? That card, along with, right, you know, two momentum to defensive stance and counterattack, right, stops his push, reduces his damage, reduces the net hits he's going to get, right, you know, and gives you the ability then to do something about him, right? I think it's a phenomenal card. I'm like Mark, I'll take it.
Yeah.
As long as they don't knock you down, is my thinking.
Yeah, but then they've, to some degree, then they've, you've wasted a plot card because they've just knocked you down, but then you've also forced them to take a knockdown because they, like, whatever they're, like, Brewers might have wanted to go for, like, a momentous push to get momentum to activate a heroic, whereas you've got Stoics, they're then choosing to not generate momentum because the card will ignore it.
Yeah.
Or it's reducing damage. So, yeah, I think, while, yeah, knockdown is a pretty good counter to it, and it sort of wastes the card for you, it also means that they've probably taken not the main, not the, their primary choice.
Yeah. Good. The only thing that came up about this card, and I, maybe I'm the only person who's ever asked this question, but I think is, does Tough Hide stack? So if you've got Corsair,
you can't benefit from the same named ability more than once.
So you could get like in
the doubles format, for example, where you could have like you could be playing Masons and Brewers, and if you had Spigot and Mallet as part of your doubles team, you couldn't double dip on Football Legend. You can't benefit from the same named ability twice.
Yeah,
brilliant. Good. Okay, so card number 7 is Who Are Ya?
Yeah.
And Andy, can you talk us through Who Are Ya?
I'm so pleased this is back as well. Right, just for a personal, I think this goes back to, you know, the first team I bought, right, you know, Butchers, like, you know, and, like, you know, fondly remembering season 1. But I think season 3 is all about 2 takeouts and 2 goals, right, predominantly. And Who Are Ya is an enemy model scores a goal. The enemy model gains a vengeance token. When a friendly model makes an attack against an enemy model that has a vengeance token, the friendly model may remove the vengeance token to gain +4 net hits. Right? So, I love this because most of the strikers who, you know, so you've got your mists, your vitriols, you know, your velocities, all those sorts of people, like high def, low hit points. Right, brilliant. Right, if they've got the ball, you're like, shit, what can I do? Especially, and I'm going to nerf myself a bit here. Right, you know, if Corsair scores, right, I would put a vengeance token on him. Or if somebody's got close control, I'll put a vengeance token on him. Because if you can wrap for that double tackle, you're taking the ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, right, you know, so it's, for me, it's a great card. But look at the team that you're playing against. Most teams, I think, are going to have some sort of goal-scoring element. I think it's very hard in Season 3 to win with 6 takeouts. It's not impossible. You know, we've seen people do it, you know, over and over. Right, you know, but I think most people are going for that 2-2 route. You know, so having the ability to slap that on them, you know, gives you a really good basis then to go after that person. And if it's their main striker and they're going to be wanting to get the ball back to them and stuff like that, you know, I love Midas scoring if I've got Who Are Ya. I'm like, come here, you little shit. Brilliant.
Yeah, I guess because the thing is, it's not always the case, but I would suggest more often than not, the person who scores the goal is quite often a bit squishy.
Yeah.
And therefore, exactly. this can make a really, really big difference, can't it?
Yeah, a huge difference. Right, you know, like, what have you got? You know, yeah, Midas, for example, right, you know, awesome captain, high defense, all sorts of manner of trickery, and this, that, and the other. So if you can take those extra 4, and then that gives you something like the knockdown and another result.
Yeah.
Right, you know, well, happy days.
Yeah. Good.
You know.
Mark, any thoughts?
It's definitely one that I pick if it comes out. It's really good to put on their strikers because what it can do is it can force them to play more defensively with their striker. So it might push them further away from, like, they might go like, oh, well, if somebody gets into, like, my Death 3 Flint, like, I suppose if you're playing Butchers and you've got Fillet and you're playing against Masons and they've got Flint, like, no Masons player is really going to want to see Fillet charging Flint on Death 3-1 with the potential of rolling, like, she's tack 8, 12, potentially, like, 15 hits on a charge. Like, it's unlikely that you would get 15, but, you know, you
can reach, such like, a good day, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you could reach, like, well up into that sort of, like, but it then, like, it then makes Flint really sad. And you can force your opponent to play a bit more defensively with him as a result of them having that vengeance marker on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've suddenly got to be really aware of that, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Lovely. So, next card is Superfan. Mark, talk us through Superfan.
You basically, your opponent scores a goal, so you concede a goal. And instead of making the goal kick, the controlling player may place the ball marker in possession of a friendly model within 6 inches of the friendly goalpost. For me, at the moment, it's one of those ones that I will immediately dump. I think what you said before we started about, like, if you've got, like, a goalkeeper model or somebody who likes to hang near the goal, like a brick or a tenderizer or a compound or a veteran velocity kind of thing, or if you want the scrum to be in your half, then probably it's probably not a bad pick, but I generally want the scrum to be in the center or into my opponent's half. So for me, I'm less likely to have somebody within 6 of the goalpost unless they're just returning to the pitch. So it's generally pretty, I think it's probably situationally good, but for me, it's not amazing.
Yeah, I think the frequency with which you are going to have somebody within 6 inches of goal is probably fairly low, unless you're playing against someone who's going to definitely score that first turn goal, or is likely to, I suppose. Or you've got a goalkeeper. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Any thoughts, Andy?
Yeah, only one. I, like Mark, really take it. Unless I'm playing a 3-goal team. So, for example, Pin Vice Engineers, Sharkfish, right, you know, or something like that. Because, especially if you've got Pin Vice within 6 inches of the goal and she's yet to activate, and I know that's very situational, but for example, right, you know, she can pop a legendary or whatever, or she can do, you know, all sorts of nonsense and off she goes. I think it's an okay card if you're playing going for the 3 goals, but like Mark, I really take it. It depends what else is in my card. It's like a lower second tier, third tier card for me. Yeah, could be a counter goal.
Meh. Yeah. Yeah, I suppose if you get a goal, I suppose the only risk with that, if you're playing counter goals, is whether, like, you're going to end up being into goal ping pong and then you're going to be on the losing side of that because you've conceded the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you concede the second one, then you might be like, yeah.
Yeah, then, risk. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, I just want to ask you one question on something you just mentioned, which is... I don't understand it, other people might not too. You talked about a situation where you might want the scrum to be in your half. Who wants the scrum in their half?
Slower teams, maybe. So Brewers can be quite happy to form a murder ball, you know, in the, you know, the towards the centre line, but more in their half because they're just that bit slower generally. So it being Brewers do to a degree. I know that's probably it.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah, excellent.
I'd say Corsair doesn't mind that.
No, he doesn't. But generally, he's got, like, people that are in goal threat range anyway. So you're kind of on the centre line and edging over into their half more than you are into your half, really.
Yeah, that's fair.
Good stuff. Next card then is one called Wingback. Andy, talk us through that wingback, please.
Right. So I find wingback is like... It's situational for me. It's okay, but it doesn't set my world on fire. A friendly model declares a charge within 8 inches of the edge of the pitch. Rewards the friendly model, place one less influence to make the charge, right? Great if you've veteran brisket, great if you've got vindictive, blah, blah, because you've got zero charge and stuff like that, right? You know, great. Now, I will say, though, if you've got a character that's got decent pushes, right, you know, and you're within eight inches of the pitch, you know, and someone is, you know, sort of silly enough to be, you know, close enough to the pitch for you to get that takeout, right? Suddenly, like somebody like Stoker, for example, right, you know, on a full stack of four with his 2-inch push on one, right, you know, or Kraken or somebody like that, or Harry, let's go back to the craziness that is Harry. Yeah, you know, Dave playing me the other day, for example, you know, charged Harry into Jack using wingback, right, and suddenly he's got 3 influence worth of attacks, right, to tell Jack to get off the pitch, you know. So I think it can be, you know, if the scrum's happening in the middle of the pitch, it can be very hard to kind of do anything except for charge in from the outside and go for it. But yeah, it's got a lot of uses, but it is situational depending on where the game is. I always consider it when I see it. Do I take it? I don't know, 50-50. Depending on who I have in my roster.
This is going to sound like a really odd thing to say, because 8 inches is 8 inches, but I was really surprised by how close you actually have to be to the edge of the pitch, if that makes sense.
Don't forget, though, it's not completely within eight, so you only need like a millimetre of your base to be within 8 inches of the edge of the pitch. So effectively, it's kind of more like nine and a bit inches, really.
Like, if you're thinking about getting yourself to somewhere near fast ground, if it's on the pitch, fast ground always has to be put within 6 inches of the edge of the pitch. Great. Right? So you know that if you're going to be playing wingback, right, you're going to be on a +2 movement charge out of the fast ground. Right? You know, playing one bit of thing. And somebody like Shank, for example... Right, you know, can go hunting real nice with wingback. Right, on a damaged model that's just come back.
Yeah, it sends Shank back to his glory days, basically. Like Shank likes having, and it plays more into, because Shank is supposed to be a winger, I think. So it plays into him being on the wings, and then it puts Shank back to like being able to kill a player who has just returned, which he struggles to do now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy, I'm going to ask you a question. You just said that fast ground always has to be placed within 6 inches of the pitch. Where would I learn that from? Is that in the OP document?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. So it's not in the normal rule book, is it?
No. Is it?
I'm not sure. It's definitely in the organised play document, but I'm not sure whether it's...
Yeah, so I'm talking about league and... Yeah, I'm kind of talking about leagues and tournaments and stuff like that. So, you know, so when you play... Like, obviously, like, if we're having a friendly and we want to stick a fast ground in the middle of the pitch, who cares?
Do you know
what I mean? Right, you know, but if you're in a tournament situation, right, your fast ground would always be within 6 inches of the edge of the pitch, so you'll know, right, intrinsically, right, I'm in here, I've got win back, right, so, you know, and yeah, Mark couldn't have nailed it better by saying it brings Shank back to his glory days, right, you know. Because let's face it, and I know if Pat Vance ever listens to this, he'll agree with me, right? You know, every Butchers player cried when we saw 2-3. Every Butcher cried. My poor Shank. Anyway, let's move on.
Good. Okay.
I might actually go and do it myself.
But I think interestingly, I understand, and I don't know whether there are any others, but it certainly has a rookie tournament player that we probably might be aiming some of this podcast towards. It might be interesting to understand that there are some rules about where ground might be placed, or where
terrain might be placed. It might be interesting to know before you go to tournaments, because that might influence your some of your decision making. Good.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So just to cover that really briefly in summary, roughly the terrain rules for an organised play event or for tournaments are there must be no more than one forest or barrier per pitch. And at least half of the terrain on the pitch must be obstructions or obstacles, so like small walls and bits like that that provide cover. But then you can obviously have like rough terrain, fast terrain. And in terms of tournaments, no piece of terrain can be within 6 inches of another piece of terrain. And fast ground has got to be within 6 inches of the edge of the pitch. And that's pretty much the
brilliant.
The bits, but that's on like page one of the organised play document, so it's quite easy to find.
So go read it.
Go read that. Yeah, while you're reading cards, also go and read the organised play document. Right. Next one then is good marker, and Mark.
Yeah.
We're over to you for good marker, please.
Again, it's probably one of those ones that I would say depends on your team. Somebody like Obulus is quite happy to use it because it gives him like a 10-inch puppet master or a 10-inch misdirection. So, sorry, what it does is during its activation, a friendly model uses a character play before making its standard advance. If the character play has a range with a numerical value, the character play gains +2 range. So, before you've taken your advance... But that does still mean that if you've got shadow like or something like that, so effectively you can have dirty knives with
brisket.
No, I was thinking of the other one.
Friday?
Yes. I can't believe I forgot a name. Yeah, Friday can shadow like and then dirty knives, so she gets a 10-inch shadow like threat with that card as opposed to it just being her sort of 8. Which is quite useful, and then she can still then move off and do something else. Or you've got like Obulus having like a 12-inch threat with Puppet Master and Misdirection before he moves, because he's shadow liked and then he extends his range. Hunters are probably quite happy with it, like it's probably not a bad one on somebody like Egret, but I think for your teams in general, and alchemists are probably happier with it. Yeah, so some people, I think it's dependent on your players, basically, is what I would say.
Andy, any thoughts?
No, I'm with Mark on this, to be honest. I've got nothing really to add to that. I like an 8-inch Rusty's, you know, with Corsair. I think situationally, depending on who you've got, it's fantastic. You know, a 10-inch marked target, for example, you know, great. You know, from Minx or Boiler or, you know, something like that, brilliant. Silence as well. Silence is great.
I'm just contemplating whether I can edit that just so that you says I like 8 inches. But we'll find
out. I can actually say that for you if you like.
Excellent.
There you go.
We'll keep that.
You made the cock joke. Yeah, go on.
Lovely. So I'm going to add my 2 pennies worth this one, because this is something that as a butcher's player with both fillet and brisket, it's not a first choice, but I know that I quite often might end up with some influence stuck on fillet because someone might do something clever and lever, and then you might end up using some for a range plays, and then this is always nice to have in that case.
I quite often
will just put this one in here. It's not, jump in with we'll talk to some of the other things that probably our first pick, and this isn't that, but it's definitely one that I'm like, yeah, why not? That might be useful in some situations.
I think if you're playing Smoke Alchemist, I think it could be nearly your first pick. I think it's definitely got merit. Definitely.
Let's just think of our audience. Why Smoke Alchemist particularly? Because
you're chucking out a huge amount of different conditions and character plays, and Smoke's got so many cool things that she can do, right? If you can get those up and in other people's faces, you know, brilliant. You know, Calculus chucking out poison clouds, Mercury chucking out his flaming stuff, you know, and then Smoke doing all of her jiggery pokery. Well, fantastic. Somebody's tried to be clever and leave them at, like, you know, 9.5 inches or something, well, suddenly calculus is like, no, you can still have it. You know what I mean? Right, brilliant. I like it.
Good stuff. Nice. Excellent. So, Andy, your final card is match fixing. Talk us through that.
So, an enemy player resolves a kick scatter. The controlling player may force the enemy player to re-roll the kick scatter. This new result may not be re-rolled. So, for example, yeah, you know, they mess up. Now, this card here, I don't often take this, but I probably should, considering how much I like to score goals, right? Because if they're kicking the ball around to generate, you know, to generate momentum on turn one or turn two, right, and you're in a position where you can kind of get up there, and now that we've got Locus, you know, who can kick the ball back towards, you know, wherever he wants. I know he can't pass back to himself, but he can kind of kick the ball back kind of into his own thing. So they resolve that kick scatter, and let's say it goes behind the goal, right? You might want to re-roll that so it goes further towards the halfway line so you can get the ball back. Also, if they're making a pass and they make a mess of it, right, and it goes veering off to the off towards the side of the pitch, you might want that in the middle because you might want to counter-attack. You might want to try and get somebody like, I don't know, like Brisket, for example, veteran Brisket, or, you know, Flint, Mist, any of the strikers. You might want that fumbled ball to be nearer them so that you can then counter and go. You know, so it could be a good, it could be like a good pressure on goal card, if that makes sense. You know, getting you kind of quicker goals.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't often take it, but yeah. I probably should.
Yeah. Mark, any thoughts?
Yeah, very much agreeing with Andy. I think you can use it to sort of, if they fluff a pass and the scatter isn't that unfavourable to them, you can force them to re-roll it, which might make it less favourable to them, or alternatively, it might end up being more favourable to you, which is always a bonus. So it's a nice one to have. But I don't, it's not like a knee slider or a brace for impact, basically.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of questions about it from a couple of situations that have come up. So the let's imagine it's the kickoff, right? And the person kicking, therefore, is kicking the ball in space, or any time someone's kicking the ball into space, and they succeed on making the kick, so they are able to re-roll the kick.
Right.
They roll the kick first time. And they choose to accept the result and go, yeah, that looks like a good result. I'm going to make the ball go wherever it is, 2-4 or whatever. And they're about to make the move. Is that when you then play the card and go, oh, no, you can't. You have to, that's the result. You've now got to redo that again. Or is it as soon as they've made the roll, or is there any kind of etiquette for when this card is actually played in terms of in the sequence?
So it says the enemy player resolves the kick scatter. So they, at the point where they have resolved it the first time, but before they sort of go, say that they're accurate on their kickoff and they go, oh, I don't like that, but you're like, that is perfect for me. Well, I suppose in that situation you wouldn't use it. If they go, that's exactly where I wanted it to go, but you go, well, that's not where I want it to go, you then play match fixing and then force them to re-roll it. And then they're locked in.
Do you actually have to, it says when they resolve the kick scatter. I mean, so resolve the kick scatter to me means they might have actually, you have to, do you actually have to wait for them to kind of move the ball marker to its new location?
So I would say once they've rolled the dice to set the direction, that is when you would play it.
Once they declare that they're keeping that result.
Yeah. So they declare that they're keeping the result, but before they actually move the ball, so you don't lose the ball position. Although it's probably not too difficult to reset the ball position because they've probably still got a widget there showing where they kicked it to.
Yeah. Because my only other thought is that sometimes, in some circumstances, we've scattered the ball and then afterwards we've had to sit with a little laser pointer or a
or a ruler or something to work out whether it would have crossed anybody's path. And that might be the moment when you choose to go, actually, do you know what, if this is going to snap, if this is, would have gone landed on one of your players, then actually I'll make you re-roll it. But obviously you wouldn't, you quite often don't know that until after the event, if that makes sense.
I think for me,
interesting. I think,
yeah,
I think you could.
Well, look, the card says an enemy player resolves a kickscatter. Once they've resolved a kickscatter, right, and you determine where the ball has landed, right, yeah, right, you know, so you know where the ball is going to end up, right, yeah, you can choose to then go, right, actually, no, I'm going to play match fixing, right, off yeah, we go, right, good, boom, good, right, but if they put the ball in and go, and you're happy with that, and you go, yeah, okay, then, the moment you agree, yeah, yeah, right, the moment that yeah, you let them move on from that, right,
yeah,
no, right, so, yeah, once they've resolved where that ball's going to be, that would be the time when you go, I don't like that, boom. And remember, you can cool, measure at any time, right, in Guild yeah, Ball, right? Now, that might mean, you know, if it's a kickoff, which, by the way, on the collected clarifications, it does say, yes, the enemy player is meeting the card requirement of having to resolve the kickoff, kickscatter, right? So I don't see why not, under match fixing at kickoff. Who knew? Yeah. Watching, looking at the collected clarifications would work. So, yeah. As far as I'm concerned, yeah, knock yourself out, right? You know, but you could say, look, I just want to just check something. Yeah, yeah, that ball path would thing, right? You're not on the clock at that point if it's the kickoff.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so long, you know, so there should be no issue, so long as you're not measuring it for like 20 minutes, in which case you're just wasting time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense, thank you.
Rock okay,
and then card number 12. And Mark, we're back to you, and we're back to you for the card called Sikkim.
Scum's best friend.
Surely that's catnip, isn't it?
Well, I think Sikkim on Scum's pretty damn good. Because generally the cat wants to be within 4 inches of Tapper.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then having the cat charge for free with the potential for like 3 extra influence is pretty busted.
That turtle, though.
Yeah, and the turtle's pretty good with it. Yeah, like, again, I think it depends on your mascot. Like, if you've got a mascot that can really troll people, then it's well worth taking. But some mascots aren't going to make the most out of it. Like, Scum will do. Quaff will do amazing things with Sikkim because he's got, like, all of the pushes. So if he's charging somebody for free, and can, with a tack 3 up to 7 with a 2 long playbook, he could potentially get like 5 or 6 inches worth of pushes, which is huge. Flask is another good one that quite likes it because he can do intensify wraps and just absolutely muller people, and intensifies on 1 success for him, so that makes it really achievable. So yeah, I think it's mascot dependent, but it's definitely a very good card. I don't know whether, I think it'd probably be a second pick, maybe not even a consideration. Again, it probably depends on your mascot. Like, as playing morticians, like, it doesn't really do anything for Dirge for me. Vile Swarm, it might do a little bit, but I haven't really played with him at all. But yes, people like Scum are all over it.
Any thoughts, Andy?
Dirge. Not with Sikkim. I think Dirge could be a thing. Could he not? Mortician. Hang on. I'm just bringing up his card. I can't quite remember it off the top of my head. But
he's only going to do 1 damage and some pushes and a singled out. So, yes, it is potentially good. But it's right, not quite in the same ballpark
no,
as like
oh,
a
Scum. No.
Like, yeah, okay, you could get some dodges.
Strong
off
box
it
is the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strong box
is
Scum.
The win.
Yeah.
Princess, you know, even loves it.
Yeah, probably.
I always thought that I have taken this quite a lot, and I have been able to use it a couple of times. The problem I have is that keeping Princess up with Philip
yeah,
is
not,
tough.
Yeah.
She's normally fleeing off around the place.
Like, for Ox, it's quite easy to do because Ox wants to be in quite a central position. Mm-hmm. So keeping Princess within four of Ox is quite easy to do. Like I say, like Scum always wants to be within four of Tapper by the end of the turn and the start of the next turn to give him tactical advice, stuff like that. So certain mascots will benefit from it largely and others not as much.
And of course, if you're a Hunter player, we're very sorry.
Well, yeah, at the moment, you've already got a Furious mascot, so cry for it. It would just depend what the new Wolf Snow will do, won't it? It might be, like, really good on him.
Yeah.
I assume it's him.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't know any of the gender of any of the mascots, do we?
Well, we know the new captain's a girl.
Oh, the Hunters? No, but any of the mascots, we don't know any of the genders.
No, they're not gendered, are they? I don't think they're just, but they some of them.
I'm pretty much assuming that Princess is a girl.
Yeah,
I reckon that's a fair bet. Although you know could what I mean? Be like, ironic.
No, it could be. You're right. Yeah, could be a thing. Yeah.
Bisexual sure, boxer dog.
Come on, Max. Why do you always have to take it this way?
Because that's the way it is. Brilliant. So that is the 12 cards gone through and added some detail. Now, I didn't prepare you for this question, so tough. Andy, can you tell me, if you could make a hand up, right, without having to do the shuffle and picking out, tell me the three cards that you would most like to have
hand. Most like to have Knee Slider, Brace for Impact.
Yeah.
And, oh God, and then this is about three that I'd take. But if we absolutely had to push me for a card, I'd take Who Are You?
Perfect. Mark, your three.
I've got the exact same three cards in my hand.
Yeah.
I've got Brace for Impact, Knee Slider, and Who Are You? Yeah. I think that's they good. Are that's the sick, three.
Sikkim would be my number four. Right, just because I play Corsair, right, and I love the idea of an octopus, slippering up. And I've killed so many people who have beaten up, with a free charge from tentacles. It's great. Corsair beats them down, then tentacles comes in. Have some of that. Brilliant.
I think for me, Wingback's probably the next one I would look at.
Okay.
I just find it quite useful.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, wonderful. That one.
Good. My three would always be Knee Slider, Brace for Impact, and Who Are You? So maybe there's some consistency here.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, as experienced players, right? How the hell do you avoid forgetting your cards?
Right. Okay. So, right. Do you know? You've seen the little widgety things I use, right? Yeah.
Blood Bowl.
In Blood Bowl, like the first thing of Blood Bowl, right? You had like a little 30mm base, which has like a little groove in it where you could put your paper dolls or whatever in, and then they would stand up. Right. It's a bad description, but I know what I'm talking about. Basically, it's like a little base with a little thing, right? And I put my cards in there so they're actually upright and facing me. Anything you can do, right, so that they're not face down on the table, right, but actually they're there in your face, is brilliant. Right, I've seen people use clothes pegs, right, to three clothes pegs, right, to keep them up. I would say, anything you can do to have those cards where you can see them, right, is a bonus.
Good. Any gems from you, Mark?
I try and get into the habit of looking at them at the start of each turn.
Yeah, nice.
But I've also seen people using like the bulldog clips as well. So you've got like a bulldog clip and you stand it up in a bulldog clip. But personally for me, I try and remember to look at them at the start of every turn. So going into the turn, it refreshes your memory what you've got left or stuff like that.
Yeah, perfect. Makes sense. Yeah, because that's the most annoying thing, isn't it? Is when you just I should use that card like four times in that game and completely forgot I had it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Good. So thank you ever so much for your time, gentlemen.
That's right.
This has been yet another awesome episode of Heroic Play, and we hope it's been useful. Mark, do you want to talk to us through a bit about how people can hear and learn more about the things that the Heroic Play are up to?
Yeah, so you can find us on theheroicplay.com. That's where the podcast feed will be, and you can listen to the podcast on there. You can download it via all your podcast apps. You can find us on Twitter at The Heroic Play. You can email us at theheroicplay@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook via The Heroic Play. Stuff that we've got coming up. We are running a 32-man tournament on April the 22nd at Bravo 1 in Birmingham City Centre. Details are on the Facebook event and on the forum if you look for the Bravo 1 Blitz. We've got about 12 tickets left, I think, at the moment. Also coming soon, we are doing Heroic Play shirts. So if you're interested in those, feel free to drop us an email to get some details, and we'll let you know how you can acquire one.
Fabulous, love that. Anything finally from you, Andy, today?
No.
Good.
Not like really.
Lovely.
But, you know, be good to each other. Yeah, like, you know, eat healthily, drink lots of water. I don't know.
Yeah, good. So just final thought from me is that this is, we've done a few of these now. It'd be really interesting if anybody is listening, just to hear your thoughts. Is there something we can do better? Is there a topic you might like us to cover? Is there, like, does anybody want to sign us up to, like, do this professionally? Because we're, you know, we're probably available, right? But it would just be nice to hear if anybody's got any thoughts they'd like to share. Come on, you'd love to get a good job and come and do this all the time. So if there's anybody's got any comments or they'd like to share, there's any feedback or anything they'd like us to cover, then you know, get in touch with us through one of the methods that Mark's already mentioned. That would be great. So we have been your host today. Thank you ever so much for your time. We hope you've enjoyed it. We'll speak to you again soon.
Bye.
Time's up, chumps.